Hi, and welcome to Let's Look. My name's Emily Van Meter, and today I'll be revisiting Sam Jaffe to find out more about her artistic practice. Enjoy!
Okay, so I just listened to our first interview this morning and came up with some of, you know, some questions from that. So you mentioned how you source your materials and how you never feel like you're starting a project from scratch. So what's the most common place that you obtain these materials from, and what does that process look like for you?
So eBay is definitely one of the biggest treasure troves for art materials, I think. I am also a very avid thrifter, so I usually do set aside some time. I used to be every week. I feel like it's gotten to be less now, but you know, every week to just kind of like do a little run through of some of my favorite thrift stores. And then eBay is sort of my like midnight snack. Like I do it. I like to look on there before bed. So I have sort of different ways that I search for things, both in person and online. I have like a lot of search terms that I've sort of have saved. So I have some like curated, like kind of lists that will pop up with things that I'm kind of constantly looking for. Like, a lot of the yarns that I use are dead stock yarns, so things that are kind of cast off from industry. So I've learned over the years just like some of the different brands that I like and companies that sell to, you know, manufacturing companies. And then, you know, a lot of that stuff that doesn't get used, you know, people will put on eBay, you know, and just like a giant lot of like, here's like 10 huge things of yarn that we're going to throw away that we thought we were going to make stuff out of. You know, so you can get them really cheap that way. And I also like that, you know, the materials end up being kind of like loaded with that meaning, you know, like they, it's sort of like the initial design for whatever they're going to be used for is some kind of symbol or has some kind of significance to like a pop cultural moment, right? So like something like fashion is usually trying to capture something about what's happening in culture. So I sort of feel like the cast-offs from that also can kind of hold some of that significance. So when I use those colors in my work, I like to think that they sort of say something about like our moment, even though I'm not always sure exactly what that is. So I don't usually invent color. It's like I kind of find color through the materials that I source. And I sort of think similarly about the thrift store. You know, I'm always looking in sort of the sweater section because I can sort of take those things apart and then remake them into things that that are my work. So same thing, you know, a lot of these items are made for apparel, you know, apparel design. So they're things that, you know, encompass this idea of trend. And so I think like in my work, there's always going to be this way that the work kind of insists on being contemporary just through the materials that I'm using because they're things that I'm finding out in the world.
Do you run into a lot of fast fashion while you're doing this? And like, how do you feel about that?
Definitely. And I was making a lot of work for a while that was kind of very specifically related to fast fashion. I got really into Forever 21 in particular, just because, you know, the clothing that is there is often this kind of like knockoff of a knockoff of a knockoff design. So it has this like also this kind of evolution in terms of its the design's existence, if that makes sense. And so I like, it sort of like reminds me of like when you copy something in a copy machine too many times and you actually start like losing information, like things get kind of fuzzy and weird. I feel like the same kind of things start to happen when you have people kind of replicating each other's designs. So I kind of am interested in that process of like kind of deconstruction through repetition or something like that. And then in my work, I, you know, fast fashion is something that is so kind of like simultaneously like extremely consumed, but then also kind of maligned. And then, you know, so it's like, I kind of get interested in that as well. Like these things that are kind of pop culturally iconic, but then also sort of like thought to be immoral or, you know, sort of like unsustainable. So, and sort of like, there's like all kinds of like class and you know, sort of implications wrapped up in that conversation. So I just feel like it's a really kind of rich area to mine. And I also like that in fast fashion, like the designs have to happen so quickly. So when something is made, it's meant to be reflective of like what's going on in the world that day, like that week, you know, it's like, it sort of like gets made and then it's out there and then people buy it and then they discard it. So it's got this like very, very kind of short life. And again, I think that's just like really interesting. It's kind of like this week in history in an item, you know?
Sure. So how did you get into fiber work? How did you transfer from, you know, getting your 2 degrees in painting to fiber work?
Well, I'd always done some kind of fiber work. I just didn't really realize that it was art, I don't think, before I started kind of incorporating it into my practice. So you can't see me, but I'm very petite for my, well, when I was a kid, I was very petite for my age. I'm still very petite. But one of the things I did when I was growing up was like, I was always kind of altering clothing to fit me. And I know this is common in like, you know, for a lot of people, if their body kind of like doesn't fit whatever standard is available at the stores, like most of those people can sew, like, and part of the reason is that, you know, growing up, you want to be able to like fit in with your friends and wear what they wear. So I was always kind of like figuring out how I could alter things to fit me, and like, you know, adding in fabric, taking away fabric. And I started getting more and more inventive with sort of the things that I would make for myself. So I found a lot of joy in that process. This was kind of happening at the same time I did drawing and painting. I've always been kind of like a just like generally creative person, kind of in craft and art and, you know, kind of doodling in notebooks and all of that. So I was sort of always doing some kind of fiber work alongside of the, like, maybe more what we think of as art practice that I was doing. And then when I was in college and especially in graduate school, I started thinking about, like, how I could kind of incorporate some of the stuff I was doing with the clothing kind of into my more painting work. So I was, like, collaging. Like, I was taking apart my clothing, I was collaging it into the paintings. I was sort of thinking about like the meaning of my clothing. So like things that I would wear, like with a certain friend or like partner or something would like take on this kind of meaning. And then when I would put it in the painting, I felt like it kind of held for me, like something about our relationship. And I really love getting dressed in the morning. Like, it's my favorite part of every day is sort of like picking out my clothes and I sort of do think about it in the same way that I think about my art practice. Like, this kind of layering of color and texture is always really kind of fun. And I love that I can kind of reinvent who I am for the day, sort of depending on what I have to do and how I feel, you know. Like, I can wear an outfit that says like, do not talk to me. I can wear an outfit that's like, I'm having a party, right? So it sort of like feels to me like a way of kind of communicating to the world something about like how I want to be interacted with and sort of, you know, my state of mind. So I think all of these things are very interconnected. So, you know, when I sort of think about like painting versus something like fiber, I mean, it's a material difference, but a lot of the principles that I think we think about, and, you know, when you take like a beginning drawing class, are basically the same kinds of things you think about when you're getting dressed in the morning or when you're making a sculpture out of yarn. You know, it's like line and color and shape and texture and like all the sort of things that we think about. So I think these things are probably less distinct than we like to imagine. And I think that, you know, it's partly to do with like the sort of gendered ideas that come with using fibrous materials. You know, they're often associated with women's work, you know, domestic spaces. Fashion is often thought of as something that's kind of frivolous. You know, I find that to be like totally not true and pretty sexist. You know, I think that it's really actually very important to most people. how they present themselves. And even people who are not interested in fashion, like my partner is not interested in fashion, you know, he has this like way of dressing that's like communicating, this is not a priority for me. And that's still something that is being communicated through how you get dressed. And it's like one of the only art forms that we legally have to participate in every single day. So I think it's really hard to actually not make a choice about what you're going to put on your body. Yeah, if that answers the question.
With all of these different mediums that you work in and the all the different like fiber works, what does a day in your studio look like?
So it really depends. I have totally different experiences depending on how much time I have and what I'm working on. But I would say like if I were to kind of average it all out, I usually spend the first probably half hour to hour just kind of like looking and hanging out and having some tea or coffee or, you know, just kind of like acclimating to being there, seeing, looking at the things that I did the last time I was in the studio, and kind of making a game plan in my brain about what I'm going to do that day. I usually like to have a lot of projects going at the same time so that I can never have the excuse of getting bored with something. So like, I'll have like a few different tables with different pieces on them. And so I'll sort of like move from thing to thing. Like, okay, I have a lot of energy right now. Let me do like the sawing of the wood, you know, and then now I'm getting tired. Let me do something where I can like turn on a movie or a podcast and just kind of like zone out for a couple hours at the end of the day. So I always try to have like a lot of different things like at different points of completion, that so that I can just sort of like always have something that I want to work on. That's the tactic that I've sort of developed over time, because I would sort of, what I used to do is like, I would kind of get in there and work for a couple of hours and I would get sick of it and I would just go home. And then once I got home, I was like, I feel like I still have energy. You know, I could probably still do something else, but it took me a while to kind of realize that I just need to kind of set up a system for myself. So I do that. I usually do some material sourcing while I'm in the studio. That's like one thing I like to do when I'm taking a break. So like sort of taking inventory of what I have and what I need. You know, because I use a lot of yarns that I find on eBay, it can be difficult to find the same thing again. So, you know, sometimes if I'm like working on something and I run out, that becomes a big problem for me because I'm like, okay, this is like a weird vintage thing I found and it was like shipped from another country. Like, how am I going to get this again? So I look at like serial numbers and like, I have all these different ways of trying to kind of find the same thing. So that actually is pretty time consuming sometimes. I try not to get into that situation. Like I try to make sure I have enough of what I need before I even start, but it does happen. And then I usually have some office time where I do like emailing, sort of looking at my exhibition schedule, you know, sort of seeing what I have coming up and trying to be on top of that kind of thing. And then I don't know if this is really a part of like my studio practice, but I do try to go to as many exhibitions as I can around Chicago, support my friends and my gallery and that kind of thing too. So I would say that's a pretty average day.
Yeah. And so speaking of galleries, what gallery are you affiliated with in Chicago?
I'm represented by 65 Grand, which is a gallery in Humboldt Park.
Do you show primarily in their gallery?
Yeah, I think I've shown 4 or 5 times with them so far, solo exhibitions. But they're not the only place that I show at. Yeah, but I do have a representation with them. So, you know, every couple of years I do a solo.
Yeah. And how did, you know, speaking about your day to day, how did becoming an educator change your practice?
Well, you know, I'm not sure it did because I went directly from graduate school to teaching. And those two things are not so different. You know, I mean, I've never really left school. So yeah, my role changed, but it's kind of a similar schedule. Like I'm, you know, it's like September to December and February to May is when I'm working. And then I get these two big breaks. And I, you know, I'm usually sort of used to the idea of kind of finding time to make my work when I'm not in class. So it actually hasn't changed my practice that much. I will say that one thing that I really gain from being an educator is just hanging out with amazing artists all day and, you know, like learning from their practices. And I think as I'm aging, it's been really good to be around people a lot younger than I am to kind of keep me excited and interesting about new things happening in the art world that I'm not sure I would know about if I wasn't around, you know, 20-year-olds all the time. So I think that's really useful. My students are amazing and so inspiring. And I think that their energy also just really kind of excites me to get back to my own work. The other thing I'll say is that it keeps you in really good practice just with problem solving, because most of my job is helping other artists solve their problems. And, you know, so that, you know, they're working on something and they're like, okay, this is where I want to get. How do I get there? And just to kind of like work through that with someone else can really be helpful for just sort of keeping that muscle really toned up for when I get back into my own studio and I have a lot of the same kinds of issues myself. So it's like, I think that it's really good practice just to work with someone else on a project. And also, sorry, I keep adding on things, but I love teaching. One thing that I also love about it is that it really helps me to kind of work through how to put things into language that I'm seeing or feeling in my studio. So like, it's easier to tell someone else the truth than yourself a lot of the time, you know, like, I feel like this is true in life too. Like when you see someone doing something and you're like, oh, this is really bad, but like, let me try to explain why it's really bad. That can actually help you kind of gain clarity and kind of understand, oh, this is why I think this. And I think that that's really useful just in your own practice in terms of like kind of knowing your own thoughts, like having to say them to someone and communicate them to someone is really useful.
And so talking about young people in particular, so when you first arrived in Chicago, I know that you mentioned you moved with a partner. How did you build your network in the city?
Definitely going to graduate school was the most important thing for doing that. I recommend any artist who's interested in, you know, sort of a more academic trajectory for themselves to go to graduate school in a place that you actually would want to live for several years after graduate school, because it just, at least for me, it really kind of connected me with a larger art community that I still sort of gain from today. So I think if you're not interested in grad school or academia, there are many other ways to do this, but that was sort of my path. So meeting a ton of other artists instantly, a ton of faculty members who are doing, you know, interesting things out in the art world, it just sort of gives you this like automatic in towards, you know, a lot of the things that can help you in your career.
Yeah, definitely. And kind of switching back to talking about your practice in particular. So if you were to create a timeline of your work, what would that look like and what connection would it have to place?
Like if I go back in time?
Yeah.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be perfect. I'm not going to fact check you. So you could. Okay.
Yeah, I'll do my best. you're asking also, like, just to clarify, like, how the place that I lived at in different times kind of influenced what I made? Something
yeah.
like that? Okay. How far back should I go?
It's up to you.
Okay. I guess I'll start in college, just because I think that's when I got like kind of a lot more serious about my art making. And it's hard to, you know, I think with growing up, it's a little bit hard to know how much place impacts you, because it's kind of your only, it's like your reality, it's like your only, you don't have anything to compare it to yet. So I guess when I was in Providence, I mean, Providence in the early 2000s was a very interesting place to be. There was a sort of like a pretty specific aesthetic that I think was kind of in the water. There was like Fort Thunder. There were a lot of like noise bands that were popular. I would say like a lot of the people I was friends with were really interested in this kind of like revamped kind of psychedelia in their work, and sort of like thinking about kind of like a more is more aesthetic. So I think that definitely influenced some of the stuff that I did when I was in college. I lived in Italy for a year. I did a study abroad in Rome and studied, you know, art history in depth for really the first time when I was there, you know, in terms of seeing things like in person. And that I think had a profound impact on me as well, just because I got really interested in like art and architecture in that part of the world. I mean, I don't have to tell anyone, Italy is just like beautiful everywhere, but there's, you know, these kind of layered buildings where some, like, there's a church that, you know, was turned into a mosque for, you know, 100 years, and then back into a Catholic church for like centuries, you know, and this sort of like back and forth and of kind of conquest and things being kind of layered on top of each other got really interesting to me. And while I was there, I was sort of developing this way of working where I would like, I would sort of paint with acrylic paint and then draw with wax and then paint with acrylic paint and draw with wax and do that like 100 times. And then I would kind of melt off all of the wax to kind of reveal all of these layers in the painting underneath. So it was this like kind of excavation process. And that was really informed by just being in a place that had like these beautiful, like peeled walls of paint. And, you know, you could just see the kind of like history of the architecture everywhere. And then I moved to Chicago, and my first job here was working for a seamstress. So I was doing like bridal apparel, and that's really when I got much, much better at sewing. And so I think that also started influencing my work, just because it became my skill got a lot better. So I was able to sort of like, it wasn't just sort of me messing around on the sewing machine at that point. Like I could actually sort of make the thing that was in my mind. And I think that also, you know, was really helpful to making my work. It's hard for me to say how Chicago in particular, like, has influenced like the kinds of visual things that I'm influenced in. Cause I feel like by the time I was here, I kind of already had developed a lot of, you know, my way of working and my way of looking and the kinds of things that I enjoy, sort of making for my own visual pleasure. So it's hard to say, but I definitely think that materially my work became much more complex, and I spent a lot less time from then on, I think, dealing with like the logistical problems of making art, just getting a sort of like more solid foundation of skill.
And then going off of that, thinking about all of your work, if there's a triad of like person, place, and practice, what lies in the middle of that triad for you? It's kind of a difficult question.
Yeah, like, so let me clarify, like, are you asking like if it was like my ideal place? Like, okay, you're talking about like influence on me, like,
yeah, like, okay. How does your like person influence your practice, and how does your place influence your practice, and how does your person influence your place? You know, like, how do all of those three things interact with one another?
Okay, and when you say person, you mean like my
person? Yeah, of course.
I mean, I guess I think about this maybe a little bit less locally, because I think a lot of my work is trying to understand something about American culture. And I think particularly in like the sort of post-internet age, that has gotten bigger and bigger. Like, trend is no longer localized to a place. It's sort of something that is like, I don't know, I feel like we could go to the other side of the world and we would sort of recognize the style and the way people are living in a different way than probably ever in history before. Definitely in a different way than ever in history before. So it's kind of hard for me to actually pinpoint, because I'm like, you know, I'm interested in American culture in particular, but like, is that not just kind of becoming more influential all around the world? And so maybe it's kind of hard to actually draw a boundary around what place is to me, if that makes sense. I really like your question, but I'm sort of struggling because I do think that my work is sort of broader than like a particular place that I find myself, you know, like, and I'm also, I'm kind of an indoor person in general. So I'm not like, I wouldn't say that I'm someone that's like always surrounded by, culture in the place that I am, you know, like, I guess maybe it's impossible not to be. I feel like I'm not doing a good job.
You're totally fine. You're totally fine.
Maybe that's as good as I can do.
That's fine. No, I really, your answer was really interesting because, I talked to one artist in particular, and a lot of her practice is influenced by the lake. And like her profound, she was a swimmer as she was growing up. And so she has like this really close connection with the, you know, with the lake. And I think that it is important to have like both perspectives, especially for this project of, you know, she moved to Chicago and her practice became like became the lake, right? And you are focusing on more of society is your location, of how you are formulating the ideas that fuel your tactile and multifaceted work. And both of those are valid.
Fair. Yeah, I think that's right. I wish I had better reverence for like the lake, or, you know, I mean, I sort of like, I feel like, I grew up, I'm from Milwaukee, so I've been on Lake Michigan my entire life, but yeah, it hasn't really seeped into my work in any way. I do, maybe one thing I could say is that, I very much relate to being a Midwesterner, and I also very much relate to being a woman. And I don't know if those things could sort of be like locations, you know, I sort of feel situated there pretty comfortably.
Yeah, I feel like definitely being a woman connects to your person, you know, and especially with, you know, you've described the, you know, the fabrics and the fiber works being classified as more as women's works. And those are very valid influences on your practice as a whole. So yeah, your answer was good. All right. And that was my last question. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time on Let's Look.